This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello, welcome to the No and They Never podcast. This week we're talking about a very fantastic 1-0 win over Stoke City at Turf Moor. Slightly different podcast this week. We're recording at about 20 past 11 at night after the match. It's myself, Natalie and James, and we're just going to have a bit of a more of an informal chat this week about the match, which was a fantastic win, Natalie. We're back to winning ways, which I think is really important, isn't it?
Oh, God, it's massively important, isn't it? It's one of those today where, for the first time, I think, this season, we've really felt the pressure. And I think coming into this game, suddenly media were talking about us in a different light, other fans were talking about us in a different light. And all season, people have been hugely positive about us and they've talked about how we're probably going to survive in this fantastic home record that we've got. But tonight, it felt like going into the game that there's just a shift in attitude, I think. And people were sort of saying, oh, you know, they've not won in seven or eight games. You've had all these away games. They're awful on the road. They're getting sucked back into it, and it just felt like there was a bit of a grey cloud over everybody. So it was massively important to get the win tonight with a massive, massive result. Yeah. Massive.
Massive, yeah. I was really worried. I think if we hadn't won this match, the next home match after this would be United, which you'd expect to get nothing from. And if that's the case, then you go into the West Brom game after, you know, five or six games at the Turf without a win. And I think our success this season has all been down to the Turf Moor being kind of that fortress. And we've almost felt invincible at the Turf, both the players on the pitch and the fans in the stand, I think. So I think getting this win was huge for us. I said before the match, if we win the match, I think we were safe. If we got beat, I thought we were going down, and we won it, which is great. What do you think, James? Do you think that is extreme? Do you think that's a fair assessment, or do you think I'm just being I was going a bit far with that?
I know some people think that it was a bit far to say it was must win at this stage, but I felt the same. I thought it was must win. I'd go as far as saying if we'd lost, we were definitely probably going to get relegated. But I did feel that if we won, I think this really does make us safe. Now, to be sure, you probably need one more win, but I mean, when you look at the fixtures coming up at home, I can easily see us getting one more before the end of the season. But I do think it lifts the pressure as well, and maybe can help us get that away win now.
Yeah, I think if we hadn't won, then that kind of you would have started to get those nerves coming to Turf Moor, which would have been really big. I should have mentioned earlier, James is in a car at the moment, which might explain
his weird background noise.
Yeah, so
yeah, it is. This is how informal and live this week's midweek little podcast update is, listeners. We're actually all just travelling back or just landed back from the game. All three of us were there, and in fact, Kevin and I were together at the game tonight, which was quite nice. Poor Kevin had to sit next to me for 90 minutes,
and it was nice for you.
It wasn't so nice for you. I mean, like, clinging on to it. If you look at Kev's knuckles, he's got my scratch marks on him where I've been like digging my nails in through.
No, it was good. You've got a really nice bunch around you, actually. It was really nice.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Kind of group chat, which was really good. There's been a lot of talk online this week about the team and the system Sean Dyche might use, and whether we should change it, whether we should change team, whether we should change the personnel, whether we need some more creativity. And he went part of the way. I was calling for 4-5-1. We didn't quite get that, but what we did get was Vaux returning to the team, which I was very happy about. We got Defoe returning to the team, which I was very, very happy about. Slightly disappointed that Defoe played out wide, but overall I was relatively happy. It wasn't exactly what I wanted, but I was very happy to see Dyche making some changes, which I think were much needed.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there. I think we were all, I think everybody was just a little bit on the edge. And I think if Dyche should have come out and named the same team again and said, you know, it's exactly the same starting lineup as it was on Saturday, I think there would have been a lot of unrest among the fans, because it just didn't work. And one of the things you want to see from your manager is an ability to change and react to a game. He obviously realised himself what didn't quite work on Saturday and made those changes. It's really hard, because you want to applaud him for making those changes, don't you? You want to applaud him for being brave. But then similarly, you also want to look at it and say, oh, why are we playing a really good left back on the bench? Put him on the bench, sorry. And why are we putting a really good central midfielder on the left side? Just play people in their natural position. So it was a nearly team for me, but it worked. We played all right. Interestingly, and I'd be interested to see what James, what do you think about this? I've seen quite a lot of match reports after the game all talking about a really ugly win. And that's really not something that I would have described that performance. It didn't strike me as being particularly scrappy and ugly. Birdie, what did you think?
I'm going to go against you there, actually. I thought it was quite a...
Oh, really?
Quite a scrappy game. Yeah, it was quite a scrappy game in general. I thought, you know, it was a really rugged performance. You know, I think both teams were giving as good as they got. I think we're lucky as well to not see a couple of red cards on the day, obviously.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought they could have had Charlie Adam go, and could have had the centre-half go there at the end with the tussle with Barnes. But just with the team bit, and you were saying about how it made the crowd feel, I thought the crowd were really on edge all game today. If we hadn't made any changes, that could have maybe just made it a little bit worse.
Spilled over.
I particularly thought, as well, one player I was surprised to see getting quite a bit of criticism was... Andre Gray, at least around where I was in the top of the James Hargreaves. You know, there was a lot of mumbling and complaining about, I think, his work rate and some of the stuff he was doing with the ball. But for me, I thought actually, you know, obviously George Boyd got the sponsors man of the match, probably because, you know, he scored the winner. But I thought Andre Gray was, you know, in the running for the award today, because I thought he was really good. Everything he did was great. I thought, as far as his first touch is concerned, which is normally the thing people pick up on, I thought today his first touch was as good as you've ever seen it, and I thought he had a really strong game. And you know, he was unlucky to not score, and I think on another day some of those chances maybe fall for him, and he's ended the game with a couple.
Yeah, we had quite a bit of that around us, didn't we, Kevin? There was a lot of people who were very quick to get on Andre's back. I think we've talked about this before, about Burnley fans' inability to get on board with Gray. But I agree with you, with James. I thought Andre was playing really well. I think he was probably sacrificed for a change in formation and tactics rather than form. But yeah, it was a funny one. Really. Maybe it's slightly different. I mean, maybe it's where we were all sat as well. I mean, Kevin, I don't remember the crowd being particularly edgy around us. Did you feel that? Did you pick up on that?
No, actually, I went into the game thinking I would be very nervy. I think when we played Middlesbrough towards the end of last season, that was another night game. That match was awful. In fact, that was the match, actually. I was measuring my heart rate throughout the match, and it was going crazy. And I expected something similar this time around. But actually, I felt quite calm for much of the match. The last 15, 20 minutes or so, particularly in injury time, was quite difficult experience. But other than that, I personally felt quite calm. I think I probably was helped by, I think we started very well. I can understand what both of you are saying about it being an ugly win and maybe not an ugly win. I think there were certainly large spells of a game where it was very scrappy. But I think what was really good for us is I think the first half an hour or so, we played very well. I think we were putting quite a few passes together. We weren't creating many big chances, but we were keeping hold of the ball. We were completing our passes. And we were doing the clean stuff right, which is something we weren't doing of a weekend, which I thought was very good for us. I think it was really important for us to be able to keep the ball at some places, complete those passes, and I think you could see that confidence growing after a few weeks of lots of defeats, and it's a long time since we've won a match. And I think just in that first half hour of a match, there was nothing spectacular, but you could slowly see that confidence returning throughout the team. So I thought that was really important to us. I think we ended the first half, well, not us, the game as a whole ended. The first half ended quite shakily, and probably started that way again in the second half, but obviously and we went and got that fantastic goal, and it was Hendrick who had that magnificent run set it up. And Natalie, we'd been talking before that we thought Hendrick had had quite a poor game.
I don't know whether or not it was poor in sort of an off game from Barton and Hendrick. I thought Barton was hugely improved today, but he did manage to miss a few passes again. But I think just generally speaking, Hendrick and Barton in the middle, I felt that they were just they just struggled against a stronger central midfielder, Stoke, that's all. And you're going to get that. You're going to get teams that just have better players in that middle of the park. So I think that they really had to fight for everything. And I just think Joey maybe just got the better of the midfield than Hendrick did. I just thought he just drifted in and out of the game a little bit. I think there were some times where he was in it and he was picking up loose balls and he was defending well and tracking back well. But then there were other spells where suddenly I'd forgotten he was on the pitch for a while. So, but it was a really difficult midfield battle. And I think that's the one thing that Stoke got the better of us. In the centre of the midfield, they were far better than we were. We were just more effective in defence and we had a little bit more about us going forward than they did. So Kevin and I were talking just before that, just saying that, you know, Hendrick was struggling, I think, to stamp his mark on the game, and then all of a sudden he just proved that Kevin and I know nothing about football and went on this crazy run and set the goal up.
I think a really key thing about the goal though as well is when you look at it, I thought Robbie Brady came on and I thought he had a really poor game, and the goal actually is one of the things that highlights it. It's a really bad pass to Hendrick. Hendrick really has to get on his horse to get there in time. And what he does with it as a result from a situation that sometimes we've seen, I think early in the game we saw both Hendrick and Barton being guilty of this, where they felt rushed to get to a ball that was short. They then panicked and sort of the first touch wasn't very good. On this occasion, Hendrick's first touch was sublime, and obviously the way he went past the Stoke defenders was fantastic. And I think he made it really easy for Boyd. All Boyd had to do was get in the right place. But it was a really well-worked goal, and it seemed like it really came from nowhere, because I don't think we really created any clear-cut chances in the game. I can think of a few where the ball bounced through to Gray and, you know, he was unlucky, because I think quite a lot of the time the Stoke defenders had a hell of a lot of Gray's shirt in their hand, and there wasn't really many opportunities that you can look back on and say, oh, you know, that's something we should have done better with, because I just don't really think the service was there today.
Yeah, and I thought it was quite funny, because obviously it's probably no secret to podcast listeners that I'm not George Boyd's biggest fan. The only person who dislikes Boyd more than me is my brother. So before the match, I bought a little postcard with George Boyd's face on to give to my brother after the match, and he went and scored. So I was there celebrating with my picture of George Boyd in the air. And
I know.
He's now my hero. George Boyd is now my new hero.
He is. We took a good picture of him waving his George Boyd postcard. You should put that in the show notes with this pod, Kevin, so people can see it.
Yeah, and you know, there's always going to be the parts of George Boyd that will always be there. I think he slows down the game quite often. I'm not sure he's decisive enough sometimes going forward, but to his credit, what George Boyd does well, I thought he did very well tonight. Now, I think he's probably his best performance he's had for quite a long time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I actually don't mind George Boyd, and I'm one of the, and I feel like I'm in the minority at the moment, in that I appreciate, and I quite like what he does for the team. I think I've said on previous podcasts, haven't I, that he gets criticised because people still perceive him to be a forward and a striker, and that he doesn't run forward enough and get crosses into the box. But it seems just so clear to me that's not the role that Dyche wants him to play. So I've been very defensive of what he brings to the team in a lot of weeks. And tonight I just thought he did what he did very well. But he did actually quite weirdly considering what I've just justified in terms of defending Boyd, he actually did get forward quite a lot today. He was very positive. I really like the link-up play between him and Matt Lawton. I think they work quite well together. It's not as forward thinking, and it's not as attacking as we get on the left wing, and it seems to me that a lot of our chances come from the left, not from the right, just because you've got two quite defensive minded players on the right wing, so we tend to attack more down the left. But yeah, I agree. I thought Boyd played really well. It was really nice to see him score that goal, actually. I liked it.
Okay, yeah, I think we've lost James now. I think he's
his reception's gone on the drive home.
Yeah, so have a good rest of the drive home, James, and we'll continue without you.
James. Yeah. We'll miss you. This is what happens when you get an informal chat. People just dip in and out whenever they feel like it. This is uncharted territory for none and ever. It's just well chilled.
You know, and he's come to chat for the goal and talk about the goal, and now, and as soon as we're going to talk about the defensive side, he's gone.
He's disappeared. Thanks, James.
Yeah, so in typical Burnley fashion, since we took the lead, as Sean Dyche likes to do, we kind of sat back and invited quite a lot of pressure, sat pretty much the entire team. In fact, for most of the time after the goal had been scored, we had the entire team within our own half.
Yeah, it was a bit defensive.
Natalie sat next to me, was very, very scared about. She was...
The listeners who sit around me are not surprised by this, because actually some of my Twitter followers today were sending me tweets asking me how my heart rate was going, especially when he put 6 minutes up at the end of the game as well. They were like, 6 minutes?
I have no idea where that came from. No, that was bizarre.
Yeah, it was a really hard one. It was one of those where you just... I agree with you, Kev. I think I can understand... do I understand it? I don't know how I feel, actually, about this very deep defending that Dyche wants to do when he's either trying to protect a 0-0 against a really tricky side, or he's trying to defend a win against some of the sides around us. It's when it works, like tonight, it's great. You can sort of look back on it with hindsight and think, well, yeah, that was a really great piece of tactical awareness. We got the goal and then we didn't take any risks and we just managed to get the points over the line. But so often it can go wrong and it just worries me. When you're living through it at the game, it's absolutely terrifying. It really is. You just sit there and just think. And when you're inviting that amount of pressure, you just feel like they're just going to get a scrappy goal, especially for the last 15 minutes. And you just think you can't do this. And then, of course, he made that final substitution where he brought Tarkowski on and took Vaux off. Just so we were just leaving Barnes up front. And you'd just look at that then and just think, well, if they score now, really early on, it's the minimum we can hope for is a point, because I can't see us scoring any goals. And obviously that does then give them the momentum to maybe try and get a winner. So it's really worrying. Saying that, I did think there were spells in that 15 minutes where we were very good at seeing out the game. I thought Barnes was absolutely sublime when he came on. I was really worried about that substitution. We both said him, didn't we? He was the menace, and he was the good menace that we've talked about. He broke up their play. He broke up their momentum. He went down and got his free kicks. That play for the last sort of 5 minutes when he was just constantly in that corner by the dugout. Not the dugout, sorry, by the tunnel. And he was just kept in the corner, didn't he, for ages. It was really, really professional performance at the end. They knew what they needed to do.
Yeah, like I say, we both questioned that substitution at the time. We weren't really sure what the logic behind it was. And we weren't really sure it was going to work or not. And it did. Like you said, it was absolutely fantastic. And I think you've got to give credit to Dyche here, because in the last podcast, we quite rightly slated him for his decision to take off Andre Gray. I think that was... We all agreed it was probably one of the worst decisions Sean Dyche has made in his managerial career. On the flip side, I think that Barnes substitution was absolutely... It was perfect.
Perfect, wasn't it? Yeah, it really was. It worked really, really well. Yeah, it just, well, there's such a relief, isn't there, around the ground. I'm gonna interject here. I know this isn't gonna be a formal formal impact. I'm not really sure what that means. It's not really a formal podcast, but I've decided that I'm gonna put a little bit of formality in. I'm gonna just kind of pick a very quick tweet of the midweek for us, just because all of that got summarized quite quickly. I think Liam Payne, he may very well be in One Direction. I don't think Liam Payne, with his new baby and his relationship with Cheryl Cole, really cares about Burnley or our very important home win against Stoke tonight. So Liam Payne did not tweet us, listeners. We have not suddenly hit the big time. Do not fret.
It's an informal podcast, but it's the same old podcast.
It's reassuring to know that we've still got the same on-brand dynamics going on here. It's Liam Crane who just I picked up on this tweet because he just said, "I've never seen the word massive said so much on my timeline as just now." And I think that's just where I've got to with this and everything we talk about with the game and the substitutions and just everything felt massive. Everybody just keeps saying that word, and that's just what it feels. The team selection, the way they set off, the substitutions, the goal, the result, everything was just massive. And I think that just, I can't think of any better way to sum it up or any more eloquent way to set it up, to be honest.
No, it's fantastic. And I think it's telling just the grins around the ground afterwards, the way the players celebrated actually, yeah, the final definitely. Whistle, all the players just essentially jumped on each other. It was one of those celebrations. You know, it was a huge relief for them.
I think they knew, didn't they?
They knew how big it was. Yeah.
Quite interesting actually. I was listening to some national phone-in style sport stations on the way home, and a lot of people are now saying this was the win that's secured Burnley. I mean, I'm not entirely sure that it's completely over, bearing in mind that we have been relegated one season with 35 points, so I think we need more, but it certainly feels that to lose now with 7 games to go, an 8-point lead, the amount of teams below us that now need to win to match all of our results and then better at least 4 of them in 7 games left, the games are running out. It feels like it's done as this. It feels like I can't see how we're going to slip up from here.
No, so one opportunity that one team below us does have to do to better us in terms of results is coming up this weekend.
Yes.
I know we talked briefly about Borough on the last podcast, but I know it's not a formal podcast again here, but we might as well quickly talk about it. In the light of this match, what do you think? Do you think we can go in there? I've said that for this match, we need to be looking for a draw. I don't think it's the end of the world if we get beat, but given that we have picked up points recently against relegation rivals, we've got a point at Hull, we've got a point at Sunderland. I think you know, we need to be going into this match thinking we can get a point. Do you think we can get more?
I think we should be going into this game thinking we can win, not get a point. I'm slightly more optimistic about this result. If we'd have only got a point tonight, or worst, lost, I think the whole setup and the whole planning for Saturday's game is completely different. I think given where we are now, and I think given the relief around the stadium to break the losing streak we've been on, but also get to that 35-point mark, I think that the players can, and Dyche can, genuinely go into Saturday's game with a huge weight taken off their shoulders, and I really want to see him positive. I think they can go there now not being afraid to lose, and I think that's what Dyche has been guilty of a lot this season. He's been very negative away from home. He's been very nervous away from home. He doesn't need to be anymore. We've pretty much got the job done. And even if we lose again on Saturday, we've got some options at home. Even some of our home games, like United at home. United are in an awful run at the moment. They're not scoring goals. Their confidence is low. And by the time they come to Turf Moor, they might not have anything really to play for properly. So we've got winnable games at home. So I think the pressure's off on Saturday. I think you just go. And they desperately need to beat us at home. So they're going to be so nervous. The pressure is all on them. Go and put them under more pressure. Chase them down. Just throw balls into their box and just make them defend for their lives. I saw them play against Swansea on Sunday, and they looked too scared to come out of their own half. And if we can pin them back into their own half and do what Swansea did, we could win. We could easily win. If Dyche goes on Saturday for a 0-0 draw, I'll be really disappointed now we've won tonight, because I think we just don't need to anymore.
Does he name the same team, do you think?
Yes. I think he plays the same formation, plays the same team. And I think that option of bringing Brady in for Defoe when Defoe gets a bit tired is fine. They don't create much, don't Middlesbrough. Watch this now. They're going to end up scoring like four, aren't they, against us on Saturday. But they don't create much. They don't score very much. So if we can just throw some creativity. If we let Andre Gray run at their defence, we could easily score two or three goals.
Let's hope that happens.
I would like to completely caveat that by saying that this does not remove the fact that I did bring back reverse psychology, and I stand by that. I have sacrificed any chance of any glory in the predictions league because I've gone for a really bad feeling about this, and that does not change. So I don't want to, you know, ruin now what we needed to get us over the line by the end of the season.
Well, I was about to say, you know, we've already made our predictions for Boer, but I couldn't end this podcast without talking about the return of a reverse psychology. Yes. You didn't seem entirely. We had to talk you into it, didn't we, the weekend?
I know.
But it worked.
It's because you had to talk me into it because my competitive edge came out. I was so completely disturbed by the predictions league, and fans, listeners are already tweeting me and going absolutely goading me about potential forfeits at the end of the season. And it might even be that I'm confirmed bottom of the league and relegated by the time the live pod goes on. So I think I was just more concerned about trying to save some face in the predictions league. But you know what? I sacrificed that because it's for the good of the team. Reverse psychology works. I don't know why. I'm so glad Jamie Smith is not on this call. But I don't know why, but it works. And oh, look, we won again tonight. So I maintain it for Middlesbrough, and I'm going to carry it on to the end of the season, and I will take full credit when Burnley stay up.
And talking of taking full credit, only one person scored again this week.
Why am I the only one on this call? James?
No prizes for guessing who it is. Yes. Natalie's reverse psychology, obviously, she went for a 2-0 defeat. Jamie and James, surprising. James, for the first time in, let's have a look at this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. He's predicted 10 wins in a row. The first time in 11 games he doesn't predict a win, and we won. So James predicted a 2-2 draw. Jamie predicted a 0-0 draw. I predicted not just a win, I predicted a 1-0 win.
Yada, yada, yada.
Which means that now my lead at the top of the table is even bigger. Natalie, the bottom on 4 points, Jamie on 8 points, James on 9 points, and then well ahead on 21 points is me, which is absolutely fantastic. Don't you think, Natalie?
Honestly, I'm so pleased for you, Kevin. How have I only got 4 points? How have I been so woefully bad at predicting any scores? I've not even predicted one score right. I've just got some results right.
It's actually really strange, actually, because in the first 5 weeks, you got four results correct in the first 5 weeks, and you've not got anything since.
Sigh. Whereas I think you've got some kind of magical power going on, Kevin. I'm quite concerned about your ability to predict scores.
Well, you know, you say that. I'm getting all these results, and after I bought the George Boyd card this morning, he scores.
Between your George Boyd card and my reverse psychology, we're going to be in Europe next season. We're going to win all 7 remaining games and
stuff. That's it. I'm going to go and buy every match next season. I'm going to go and buy a random player's card and see if they score.
That'd be brilliant. We could have some kind of mural at the end of it.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for joining us. I would say thanks for joining us, James, but he's not here anymore. But if you listen back, thanks for joining us. Natalie, thanks for joining us, spending your evening. It's now approaching midnight here.
I've had a lot of Kevin this evening. I am going to now end this call.
I think it shows how much we enjoyed the match, and also how exhilarated we were by the result, and how fantastic the result was that we've decided to stay up until midnight talking about the match.
Exactly. Well, I hope you enjoyed it, listeners. This has been a bit of an informal chat, so do tweet us and let us know what you thought about our little post-match informal gossip session, I guess. I'm not really sure what we call this. What do we brand this as, Kev?
It's just a thing.
Yeah. Our midweek thing.
Yeah.
Hope you liked it. Let us know.
Yeah, please do get in touch. You can tweet us, knowingthenever.net. You can go on the website and send us an email from there, which is knowingthenever.net. Thanks, you know, as always, to all our Kickstarter backers who we couldn't do any of this without you, so thank you so much. Thanks to Rick, who does the artwork. Thanks to me, who's going to be editing this on the bus on my way to work in the morning in about 7 hours' time. So can't wait for that. And yeah, thanks, and we'll see you. We'll have the next podcast after the Middlesbrough game. So I've been Kevin Robinson, and this is the None Another podcast. Good night.
I love how you nearly said I've been Jamie Smith, and that would have been too funny.
I almost did.
Oh, perfect.
I can't see the chat. So.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Fine.
So we can slag you off.
Yeah, but if we need to prompt you on something, Birdie, we'll say it and then we can just edit it out.
Say my name.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
P.S. In the middle of all the excitement last night, I forgot to mention that tickets for our live podcast event are going really well, so make sure you get yours soon. It's on the 6th of May, after the West Brom game, at Turf Moor. The link's in the show notes. Get yours. Hope to see you there.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.